You're not human.
That's her. Are you that guy with the evil powers? I think everyone has dark urges. It's kind of my thing.
Adventurers, to a special episode of the He Who Writes with Monsters podcast. I'm D. Allen.
And I'm Donnie B.
All right. So today, we decided we want to have a little fun and kind of go off beat a little bit and just talk about the economics of Palamustis and, you know, the towns surrounding Greenstone.
Yes, we are going to get into a little bit of discussion. Some notes that we had from previous episodes that didn't really fit into the conversation that we were having there. And just our general thoughts on the world itself, you know, flesh that out a little bit. So I am excited to be here. I'm ready for it. I hope you guys enjoy it.
Absolutely. Let's get right into it. As we left off, Jason was passed out in the back of a wagon, being drugged through the desert. And finally, for the first time, we see what looks to be something on the horizon, and it is a giant emerald green mountain. And I learned recently on my read through that that mountain is not made of emerald. It's made of marble. But I guess I'll just still drop a fact, because when it was mentioned that it was green, like a green stone mountain, my mind immediately went to like ruby, sapphire, and emerald are three things that are marketed in different ways, and they seem like these unique, interesting, exotic things. They are literally all the same mineral with different impurities making them different colors. That mineral is corundum. Still a very cool, hard, you know, gemstone.
That's really interesting. When I first heard the greenstone being described, the green marble, you know, I thought of like a really deep green blue, almost like a like an emerald turquoise kind of, like kind of like moss that you would see growing on rocks in the bottom of the earth. And I think after this is a common thing. I think after this part of the book, it's usually just referred to as greenstone. And so I think it's a common misconception that it's like regular stone. I think a lot of people see it as stone for the majority of the series instead of like actual marble. It's like the deep dark green of it versus the emerald green of it. I don't know. It's kind of weird to think about.
Right. And I feel like so many things in this series tend to be gem-like in quality. I just kind of assumed that the mountain would be gem-like in quality as well.
Yeah. And that's fair.
And I guess it does actually change my perception of what the villages and whatnot around this area look like. Now, they're not actually on their way to Greenstone. Well, they're on their way to Greenstone, but they're not there yet. Where is it that they actually are right now?
I believe it's called Northwest Quarry Village 4. It's just a quarrying village where they dig the mountain for the Greenstone. Big quarry site, and then they ship it downriver to the city of Greenstone to be processed. Which, interesting factoid. To me specifically. So it's mentioned a few times throughout the series, the lazy naming of things. You know, they name the city Greenstone because of the greenstone that comes in through the rivers. And every time
right.
I read that or I listen about it on Audible, it immediately reminds me of Salzburg in Austria. Because the city of Salzburg was named Salzburg, meaning mountain of salt in English, because all of the salt that they were mining from the mountains in this area was floated down the river to this city in mountains of salt. So that's what they called it. And it's the exact same thing that's happening here, just with Greenstone.
Oh, it is. Green stone, salt mountain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is basically Austria in Africa.
Wait, so does that mean iceberg just means ice mountain?
Yeah, mountain of ice.
Huh. Okay, well, this is not a mountain of ice, nor is it a mountain of emerald, as I thought. It is indeed a mountain of marble, and it is essentially the basis of the economy of this area. And it's a pretty lively economy. They, you know, they mine the stone and I'm assuming trade it out to pretty much anywhere for whatever they need. But what we do see in this is some pretty interesting stuff that I would consider to be called magitech, at least in the literal sense of the word.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree. This is one of those big things. When we get back to Earth, magitech is a big thing, combining technology and magic. We see it a lot with electronics and vehicles specifically. Mm-hmm. And we had talked about this off camera a little bit too. But the term technology is just anything that we make, basically. It's like arrows are technology, bows are technology, houses are technology. And so all of the things that we see in this village, wheels, yeah, perfect example of technology. One of the first technologies, actually.
And I mean, I feel like, at least to be a little more descriptive, is at least in terms of technology, in my mind, it implies any sort of machine, which is, you know, for example, the wheel, good example. It's, you know, one of the most simple machines possible. In fact, I think the screw is the only possible simpler one. No, screw's not simple. What am I saying?
Not really. I think a machine is just still a simple machine, anything. Though. I don't know if a screw would be considered a machine. I think there has to be at least two different pieces working together to be a machine.
Well, it is, because it is a flat plane around a cylinder. It is two concepts working together.
But it's one thing doing one thing. It's like with the wheel plus an axle equals a machine. The two parts themselves are not machines.
Why don't we figure out what the definition of machine is first?
Yeah.
To see where we're at. All right, so a machine, as defined by Oxford, is an apparatus using or applying mechanical power and having several parts, each with a definite function and performing a particular task. Hold on. So I still think a screw would apply. Hold on. A screw is considered a simple machine. Like I said, it is an inclined plane wrapped around a cylinder, and they convert rotational motion into linear motion. So they do count as a simple machine.
I disagree, because a screw doesn't necessarily do that. A screw is a fastener. It's one piece of technology, one singular item, that when applied a secondary item to, creates an effect to fasten.
Okay.
So a screw can't do anything without a screwdriver, which would make you plus the driver plus the screw combined one machine. A screw itself isn't going to fasten itself to anything.
Okay, you're thinking on terms too complex, because like I said, the definition is a simple machine, and a cylinder and inclined plane are two different technologies that had to be put together to come together as one, as a machine. So it is in its barest form a machine. It is a simple machine. I learned this in high school physics class, or science, geometry, math, education, dinosaurs. I'm just naming things now. But it is considered a simple machine, just like a wheel is a simple machine as well.
I think we're being way too technical with this. By that definition, anything 3D is a machine.
Not necessarily. A desk is not a machine because it is just a desk.
Yeah, it includes a flat plane combined with a vertical plane to create a surface to put things on. That's a machine.
Those are both flat planes.
No, but one's horizontal, one's vertical. Therefore, machine.
All right. We're going to find out if a desk is a machine. A desk is not considered a machine.
Why?
Machines involve motion and energy transfer to achieve a specific outcome.
Okay, but a screw doesn't have motion or energy transferred until a secondary object is applied to it. Okay, much as I would argue a wheel is not a machine until there's an axle.
Okay, but it specifically transfers energy. That is what it does.
That's just one piece of it.
No, but the thing
Oxford said there has to be several pieces.
A machine is typically defined as a device that changes the direction or magnitude of a force to perform work. So,
according to who? Where'd you get that one from?
Oxford.
Oh, okay.
Also, the Greek origin of the word machine is mekos, which means contrivance. So a screw is a contrived object of a helical, of a cylinder and an inclined plane.
We spent way too much time arguing about this.
I don't give a fuck. A screw is a machine.
I disagree, but we'll just leave it at that.
Fine. Either way, point being, we can get real pedantic about what technology even is. And while we're on the subject, before we get any further, let's at least just find out what technology means. All right. Well, technology is a lot more confusing. But basically, it is the application of scientific knowledge for practical purposes. And its root words come from art and craft as well as knowledge. So knowledge of arts and crafts, which basically mean skills.
Yes. There's a lot of different things can be considered technology.
Yes, which is why I believe that although they consider Magitek in this series specifically to be magic mixed with electronics, I think a minecart or mining tools magically enhanced still count as Magitek.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely they do.
All of that.
All of that for that.
All of that.
Oh, we see this happening a lot. We see this happening a lot in society. We'll see it a lot wider scale when we do get to Greenstone. But, I mean, even here in the village, you know, the magical lighting solutions, you know, we see, you know, running water and cooking elements and stuff within the buildings. All of that is magical arrays incorporated with things like, you know, pipes and heat boxes and buildings, which is all technology that isn't inherently magical. So I would consider pretty much anything here to be Magitek.
Right. Now, question for you. How do you think the fridges work? Is it just like an ice rune? Or is it, you know, is there something a little more technological involved, like a heat pump of sorts? Or what do you think?
So with refrigerators, I would say, based on what we know about the magic in this world, there's basically two options. The first one being a ritual circle designed to create temperature changes, right? So, like, when we meet Clive, we'll have his combat rituals that can increase or decrease the temperature of something, similar to that. Mm-hmm. So you have a cold-producing ritual that you just add a spirit coin to. It could be as complex as a temperature decreasing ritual combined with either a wind or an ice or a water quintessence gem. Like we would see in like personal comfort devices, like Jason's bracelet later on, he just has to add a water quintessence to it. So it's powered by quintessence instead of spirit coins.
That makes sense.
So yeah, the easiest thing that I can think of would be just a temperature changing ritual combined with a wind quintessence that will create just a cold breeze within this box. So changing the entire ambient temperature of a box into a refrigerator.
This absolutely implies that there are refrigerator techs, but basically just refrigerator ritual magician repair techs in Palamustas.
Absolutely. And we do see this in this world. You know, there are people who make their living off of ritual arrays dedicated around these specific household rituals. You know, people like basically plumbers that go around and just know the plumbing the plumbing array magic, and can go in and install these circles.
Plumbing astral
and
magic?
Yeah.
Oh my god, like flushing.
I am the great astral being plumber. Yes, maybe that's where it goes, who knows. They absolutely do have those.
Yeah, and you know, because we know from earlier that they would have to be custom made when that fridge is installed in the place to account for ambient magic conditions in the place. So the installation of the fridge, or really any implement, has to be custom installed by that ritual magician, which I guess would imply more than likely a more homegrown feel to pretty much anything you buy in this town, because at least in terms of what I want to call Magitek, because, you know, if what they're doing is specialized, maybe this guy is like, all he does is appliances. Like, you go to Bob's Appliances and he and his team go out and install whatever appliance it may be with the proper ambient ritual magic, whatever it may be. And, but it's just like the local guy who builds and installs the product. You know, I can't imagine I can't imagine them being super industrial, but we also see stuff like desert skimmer motorcycles and stuff. So I don't know. Where do you think their technology level really sits?
Well, this is an interesting question that we can dive into. I think they are very more technology based around convenience versus technology based around need. Like, we are, you know, like in our society, we have electronics and plumbing and electricity and oil and all this stuff. Our technology is where it is because of, you know, basic need. And our society is developed around the economies that we've built and the resources that we need to transport. And I feel like this situation is similar to like we would see in Harry Potter. You know, the wizarding world in Harry Potter is technologically still in like the Victorian era. They're still far behind. You know, and I think this planet this society would be similar in age to, you know, Earth, but their technology is so far behind simply because of magic. You know, the magic does what they need it to do. They don't have the necessities to transport large amounts of resources or to build an economy based around fleeting resources. So I think technologically, you know, the things that they have are based more around convenience, like the skimmers that they have are to transport the spirit coins, you know, to and from the desert to get people who don't have movement powers across the desert. You know, we see in bigger cities like Vitesse and Rimuras, the massive flying machines that they have and the huge storm accumulators and everything. Their technology is at a higher level because the magic is at a higher level, so they can do a lot more things with Magitek than a low magic zone like this can. And it's just, why wouldn't you have a massive blimp, you know, regardless of whether you need it or not? Why not have it?
Sorry, so I agree with all of that, but I feel like you misunderstood what I was asking. What I was getting at is, like, on a literal economic and production level, what do you think, like, production of these things looks like in Palamustis? Like, are we looking at factories, or are we looking at, you know, artisans?
Got you. So I think the majority of the things that we see are more artisan craftsman type things. You know, the biggest operation, if you will, that we've seen in the series thus far is, you know, the transport depot that we get to, I think, in book 10, when they're traveling to Uresh and they have the second team with them and they wanted to buy their own transport. So they go to a dealership, you know, they take the water submarine to a shipping yard to disassemble. It's basically the same thing there. You know, it's like a dealership, like a Ford factory, where they mass produce these types of vehicles. But I don't think it's as fleshed out as like assembly line. Let's build 1,000 of these right now. I think it's more like we've got 10 people working on 50 of these vehicles. You know, and they're all building them together. So I think it's kind of in the middle, depending on where you are. In a place like Greenstone or like the Quarry Village here, I do think it's mostly artisan. We know all of the clothing depots that we see, the clothing stores and armor and weapons and all of that is going to be mostly artisan work. You know, people train for years to do this stuff. So depending on what you're buying and where you're buying it, I think would determine the production process in terms of technology. I would say it's all pre-industrial.
Right. And that's kind of, I don't know, like I said, I guess I go back and forth on it because it would make sense that it would be pre-industrial seemingly. Actually, now that I think about it, yeah, you're definitely right. Cause you know, you get like the diamond ranker who makes the cloud flasks and stuff. So, yeah, actually, given that society as a whole doesn't need something like cars or ships and stuff like that are probably way more luxurious and way more fine handcrafted in a way. It would be like if the whole world was selling nothing but Lamborghinis, you know what I mean?
Right. I think a good parallel to draw with our world would be, you know, during the Victorian or the Renaissance eras where, you know, there was a little bit of mass production. There was a little bit of, you know, goods trading throughout the whole world, but everything was still built by hand by people, you know. The best example I can think of here is we have these massive green stones being shipped downriver into the city that can be loaded on ships to be taken elsewhere in the world. You know, they have a transportation system, but even in this area, they don't have the ability to just mass transport wood from a whole nother place of the world into where they need it for building purposes. So we're like right on the edge of mass transport and mass production, but not really necessary here.
Yeah. And so I noticed here they mention that wood basically isn't really used much at all. Certain things, but basically everything is constructed out of the marble, or, you know, their doors are made of like thatch or whatever. And mm-hmm. the interesting thing observation he makes is that there's likely low crime in the area, given that, you know, large heavy doors didn't come about, you know, because we were scared of the cold. They came about because we were scared of the people or scared of what's out there. I find it funny, though, is like, is there less crime because it's a closer knit community? Is there less crime because everything is handcrafted and everyone respects the craft and it's a more barter-esque society? Or is it just the fact that everybody's essence users and they could, you know, you don't know whose door you might be opening?
I think it's a combination of elements. In the Quarry Village, I think the majority of it is absolutely just because it's a small village where everybody knows everybody else and everybody's proud of their village and everything. You know, it's harder to steal from somebody or to break into somebody's house when everybody knows whose house it is and everybody knows who's breaking into that house. You know, we see this in Greenstone. There's a whole entire section of the city that is devoted to criminal enterprises. You know, it's a lot more of a thing in larger cities than it is in smaller areas like this. So I think that's the majority of it. And I do think a lot of it also comes from, you don't know who may or may not have essences. And the guys with the essences are usually the big bads. So if you have essences, you're not a criminal in this area. If you are a criminal, you don't want to mess with anybody that does have essences.
Right. Yeah. And I think a lot of that has to do also with why they mention that there's no tourism really in Palamustis, because Palamustis as a whole is a lot more dangerous of a place. Going to somewhere like Rimaras, how, you know, it might be beautiful, but you got to go through a lot of shit to get there. Vacationing destinations might not be as ideal in this kind of society, just given that there's just so much else going on. Like, who's got time for a vacation? The next monster surge might be coming.
Right. I think that's the biggest difference between Palamustis and Earth in terms of culture. You know, because you're absolutely right. The people who do go vacationing are often adventurers that are just out to see the world. You know, Earth is, at least in our society and in the book series as well, you know, tourism is very much a thing that anybody can just do. You know, anybody can just go and see a place for a couple of weeks and then come back. But if you wanted to do that, you wanted to just go from Greenstone to Rimaras for the weekend, you either have to find somebody that can portal you there, or you have to find an entire escort to get you through the high magic zone to get there, and then spend a lot of money when you're there. And so economically, it's just not a thing. The people who vacation are rich, so it's not very accessible to the lower class and the normal people who just need to run their farm.
Right. And I mean, realistically, you might consider vacationing in this society to be something more akin to adventuring. You know, you see way later in the series, Amir Bahadur is a treasure hunter, but like through and through, he's just an adventurer. He's doing adventurer things. He's just doing them for his own gains. He's not doing quests on the board, but, you know, he's still an adventurer.
And so that does bring up the question, you know, if Jason, coming from Earth to Palamustis, you know, he mentioned several times in these chapters that, you know, this place is just a perfect tourist destination and they can make a lot of money off of doing this. He goes touristing around. himself, you know, when he goes up to the mountain. He does a little bit. But like knowing what Jason knows about a tourist trade, if he wanted to, how successful do you think he would be at setting up like an entire tourism business in this world?
So realistically, I think he absolutely could have done a whole host of different things with the powers that were available to him from like at this point. I mean, he absolutely could have literally become a shady merchant, sneaking through the shadows and doing all this, you know, silly stuff. But yeah, I think he easily, you know, could have chosen, instead of adventuring, he could have chosen to find a vocation of sorts and not really have to worry, because, you know, at this point currently he's got what, at least 10 gold coins. So he could literally buy half the village outright right now that he's in.
Oh, 100%.
You know, I think his biggest hindrance at this specific moment would be networking and connections. He doesn't know anybody, so he doesn't, you know, he can't network and connect this anywhere with anything, you know?
Right. And I don't think that would be too big of a challenge for him particular, because, you know, we see, you know, in these chapters, the team is going to this village in order to find the guy that set them up for an ambush. And he just kind of goes off and does his own thing in here. And, you know, by the next day, he basically knows everybody in town. And so if he can, he just kind of repeats that process through everywhere that he visits. Already in the series, if he buckles down and does that on purpose, then I think, you know, a year he could set up a perfect tourist area in this area of the world and then expand from there, you know. I don't think that would be too bad for him.
That's true. And it's funny because his future power set, with like all of his portal abilities and whatnot, would actually be really apt for running a tourist business.
Oh, yeah. Well, and even, you know, later on, we see Clive studies the Builder Cult's portaling network, right? And manages to activate one. So we know that there's a way to create, like, solid-state portals that people can use. You know, if he can get Clive and come up with a, like, a portal array around the world, and be like, hey, this is our office. You want to go here? Just come into this door. You know, give us X amount of money and we'll get you there, and just come back when you're ready.
I kind of like the thought that this series will end seeing Jason doing something along those lines, you know, becoming this all powerful person, but really just wanting to like chill and relax.
Yeah.
And you know, whenever this series does end, I think it'd be nice to see Jason just retire into, like, I'm just going to run some tourist thing, or I'm going to run a school, or, you know, something in honor of his friends or whatever. I'm going to do this for a couple centuries. That'd be a nice leaving off point for the series.
I think so. Just the last thing we see is Jason giving a tour of this mountain.
Right? I mean, it would be so fitting to bring it all back. Have him living in the manor that, you know, in the Vayne estate.
That would be crazy.
Dude, that'd be cool. I think that'd be really cool.
Oh, yeah.
So here's another fun thought experiment we can go on about the economics of Palamustis, is what the possible exchange rate of the coins are. We know that they basically only use lesser and iron rank spirit coins for money pretty much entirely on a day-to-day. You know, silver and gold coins are worth just so much that, you know, unless you're, you know, a really rich person buying some really big thing, it's a really impractical form of payment. What do you think would be a logical equivalent for an exchange rate here?
So I think we actually do know the exchange rate. It's one of two things. It's either 100 lesser spirit coins to an iron, and then 10 of each spirit coin in ascending order. And so 10 iron to the bronze, 10 bronze to the silver. Or we multiply that by 10. It's 1,000 lesser to the iron, and then 100 to the silver, 100 to the bronze. That makes more sense to me, the 1,000 to hundreds, but it could be 100 to 10.
So
I think it's 10.
Okay, so what if it's descending, like lesser spirit coins? What if it's 10,000 lesser to one iron, and then 1,000 iron to bronze, 100 from bronze to silver, 10 from silver to gold?
It is not. I know for a fact that it's the exchange rate from one to the other is the same from iron to gold. I don't know if we ever get into diamond. And right. Lesser to iron is 10 times that amount. We'll come across it here in the next few chapters.
A diamond spirit coin.
Yes, we do. I'll give you two guesses on what Jason spends it on.
I'm guessing food.
Nope.
Women?
That doesn't count. That's not a real guess. So we see Jason spend the spirit coin, the diamond rank spirit coin, just after he gets back to Palamustis from Earth.
Oh, does he buy Crystal Wash?
He buys Crystal Wash. He outsources through Shade to one of the big dealers in Rimuras. And as soon as he gets back, basically, just immediately as soon as he gets back, everybody starts running out of Crystal Wash. This dude fills up an entire warehouse full of barrels, like actual keg barrels, the same style you would see in whiskey brewing. Full of Crystal Wash. They go through a whole process where they identify the validity of the coin and its rank, and then they have to identify who Jason is to make sure he is who he says he is. And this is all done through third-party representatives. And then they give him the keys to the warehouse, and he dumps all of that into the Cloud Flask. That's where he gets his fish tank of Crystal Wash in his Astral Kingdom. His little soul space.
That's funny.
So yeah. So we do see at least one.
That on any run through of this series yet.
That's like my favorite part. My favorite part. Like, he barely uses gold spirit coins for anything. Nobody uses gold spirit coins except for buying large amounts of land and buildings and stuff. And he straight up spends an entire diamond rank coin. He could buy this entire region of the world that he's currently in, around Greenstone, for a diamond rank coin, but he uses it to buy Crystal Wash. He is never running out ever again. Right. He is traumatized to the core.
If you recall, the last time he bought Crystal Wash before that was 3 gold coins, in which Jory was like, bro, are you freaking kidding me? Like, that would be like literally someone handing you like $3 million. Like, bro, I really believe in your podcast. Here.
Yeah. This is like my favorite running joke of the series, right? Him with Crystal Wash. We all know how he is with Crystal Wash, which I can understand. But also, everywhere he goes, somebody is asking for Crystal Wash, and they're always out. Like, he's buying all of the Crystal Wash he can get his hands on, you know, to the point where he's trying to get Jory to just make Crystal Wash for him. And Jory's like, dude, somebody has to buy it. Somebody else needs it too. You can't have it all. you know, and we get to Rimuras, and all of a sudden they're all out of Crystal Wash. We get to Yuresh, and all of a sudden everybody's out of Crystal Wash. Like, nobody ever associates him with that lack of supply, you know?
I know.
Which is crazy, because it's like, you'd think, at the very least, somebody in his own team, you know, is like, hey, everybody's out of Crystal. Jason, where are you?
Like, we know you're
like, hey, we're coming into town. Hide the Crystal Wash. Yeah. Yeah. That would be the first thing that I would, if I ever heard Jason Asano was coming into town, I'd be like, everybody hold your Crystal Wash. We know it's going to go. Immediate short supply before he even gets there.
Now, the funny thing is, at this point in the book, he doesn't even know what Crystal Wash is yet.
That's true. Which, blowing my mind, right? I think this contributes to his obsession with the stuff, right? Because I guarantee, at the very least, bare minimum here, Gary has Crystal Wash. I guarantee it. Nobody offers him Crystal Wash after his rank up ceremony. Nobody offers him Crystal Wash to clean up with at the end of the first day. Nobody offers it to him after he passes out by losing all of his blood. Not even a thought. Like, he has to take several showers and he still can't get the stink off of him from the rank up. And nobody's like, hey, try this.
To be fair, though, everyone's attitude towards Crystal Wash is a lot different than Jason's attitude, or I guess really an Earthling's attitude towards it would be. To them, it's like a really special, like, yo, this is like for me when it's like real, real bad, you know? And I mean, it's canonically really expensive as well. So, you know, that would be like, yo, let me give you one of my very expensive things, guy I just met.
I mean, yeah, but also, I feel like these are people with compassion towards other people. You know, they've already offered to train him. They've already offered to help him get essences. You know, they've been protecting him because he saved their lives. You know, if somebody saves my life, and then they're gonna go through the most disgusting thing they've ever been through, I'd be like, maybe I could part with a Crystal Wash. Get me back when we make you an adventurer, you know? So you can buy me some later. They're making adventurer money, so it's not like they're all broke. Rufus is probably richer than anybody at the moment, you know? And I just feel like the worst thing he's ever gone through in his life and might ever go through in terms of just the amount of filth, maybe somebody would have been like, ooh, that is gross. I'm going to help you out.
I have a different perspective to give you for that.
Okay.
All right. So as we've been going through learning about Farah, Gary, and Rufus, you know, who they are, I feel like there's an element that we've really not mentioned. This is just something I've been kind of thinking about. And, you know, we've talked a lot about how they are noble, they're heroic, they're this and that. However, when you see how they talk to each other, they're kind of rude to each other constantly, right? And we do get them described as athletes in a locker room at one point. And so I feel like, in a sense, we don't see a lot of it because Jason saves their lives and gets really close to them really quickly. So we don't really get to see the exterior them that they really showed everybody. But I'm under the impression that these three are actually kind of assholes. And, you know, they very intentionally did not tell Jason he was even going to go through the rank up gross process. They stood around and laughed at him, actually, while he had gone through it. And then while complaining about how bad he stinks, they kind of just gave him shit about it. I kind of want to say that they're just a little bit mean-spirited jocks, and a lot of their mean-spiritedness gets washed over because he gets close to them by saving their lives.
So yes and no. You know, I see it as like the same. They're basically blue-collar workers. They're going to have a blue-collar attitude towards each other, right? You know, we're gonna be assholes to our buddies, you know, because it's funny, you know, it's all in love. We're doing this. It's basically just a I love you, man, but I hate you at the same time type thing. It's all coming from a good place. Mm-hmm. The not telling Jason about the end of the ritual and his rank up, I feel like was half, this is going to be funny because he's our friend, and half, we forgot he didn't know about that at the same time. But also, we see Rufus's speech to Jason. You know, if we're talking about their interactions with normal people, with other people, I feel like they're going to be a lot more compassionate and straightforward. They're not going to be as much of the assholes that we see here towards normal ranked people, because they are there specifically to help and protect these people. You know, we're not going to make fun of the dude at the general store because we're here to make sure that he is safe in his bed at night. We are here because he is more important. So they're not going to walk up and just be assholes to everybody, but the people they feel comfortable being assholes to. I feel like that's where it comes from. You know, Rufus isn't going to go around and just start hitting people because it's funny. He's going to go around and make sure everybody's okay.
I'll give you that. I was just trying to make a case for why they might not have given him crystal wash. And I was like, you know, maybe it was a bit of that mean-spirited. And it still could be that, like, mean-spirited, he's our buddy, and, like, yeah, he's just going to have to go through it. Like, I'm not going to, like, I could, but it's expensive, and he'll be fine.
Right. The only thing I can think of is it being more of a rite of passage thing. Like, oh, we all went through it, now you do too.
Right.
But also, if I was going to be a dick to somebody, I'd give them the crystal wash because I don't want to smell that. Like, here, clean yourself up because you're getting in my way. But it also traumatizes Jason to the point where he is obsessed with crystal wash, and it deeply, deeply affects him on his time on Earth.
I don't know, man. I think it's a little up in the air whether or not they are assholes or they're just looking out for their own wallets. You know, if you listening have a comment, leave it down below or to the side or wherever you leave comments on wherever you're listening.
Indeed.
But yeah, so, and I mean, I think, you know, the economics of this town, or rather just this society in general, are interesting given how similar yet different Earth versus Palamustis are. Like, they took very different paths with essentially the same starting points, the only difference being one had magic in great supply, the other had basically none.
Yeah, very accurate, I would say.
It's like two twins. You starved one and fed the other.
That's horrible.
It is, but that's literally
inside all of us are two wolves. You decide which wolf you feed.
Inside of you are two universes. One is fat and happy. One is small, less happy. But thankfully there's Jason Asano's out there to combine the two and bring balance to the force.
Something like that.
man.
All right. Well, that about does it for this conversation on Palimustis economics. I feel like we might have learned some things, or we just speculated. What do you think?
I think there was definitely some learning going on. I enjoyed doing this special episode for you guys. It gave us a chance to really talk about some stuff that didn't fit into the storyline, but definitely needed to be talked about. I had a lot of fun doing that.
Yeah, definitely. And our next episode will be our normal episode. It's going to be episode 9. And we're going to really get into Jason discovering his first real civilization in Palimustis that isn't cannibals.
Yes, we will definitely go into how Jason feels about Palimustis versus how we feel about Palimustis like we did this time. Find out where the story is going, and then deep dive into the actions taken.
Yeah, absolutely. And we get some really charming descriptions of him meeting the townsfolk and interacting. And we just get to see Jason in his, you know, really normal self element. And I got some cool stuff to talk about with that, about Jason and the common man.
Yes, I do too, and I'm excited to get into it. So stay tuned next time, and we'll bring it to you.
Absolutely. Well, till next time, I've been D. Allen.
And I've been Donnie B. Make sure you check us out at HXWM_podcast. You can find us on Facebook, on YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, and X, as well as the He Who Writes with Monsters podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Yes. And since that's the first time we've ever said that out loud, HXWM is H, three W's, followed by an M.
That is correct. You can find us at HWWM_podcast.
All right, folks. Till next time, remember, fight monsters.
Don't become one.